The presidential election in November was nothing short of historical. Americans went to the polls and let their voices be heard, overwhelmingly electing Donald Trump as our 47th president. You can hear his inauguration on AFR beginning at 11 a.m. Central, January 20th. So if you're not able to watch, you don't have to miss out. And make sure you tell your friends and family so they don't miss the live feed of Donald Trump's inauguration ceremony, January 20th, starting at 11 a.m. Central on AFR.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. Hope you're having a great morning. Wanted to read to you from Psalm 139. David says this in beginning in verse 13, "For you," speaking to the Lord, "for you formed my inward parts, you wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were all written the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them." Well, we are in a campaign at American Family Radio with the ministry called Preborn, and the campaign is to save babies. Preborn is the direct competition to the abortion industry and the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the United States. And when you let a woman see her unborn baby in her womb and have that ultrasound and hear the heartbeat, a baby's chance of life is doubled. And so we are asking our listeners to join in this campaign as AFR joins with Preborn. $28 provides one woman seeking an abortion of free ultrasound, and $140 provides five free ultrasounds. And to get involved, you can call 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or just go online to afr.net. Now, on the program this morning, we have the founder and the president of Preborn, Dan Steiner, and he's a visionary leader under the direction of Jesus Christ, and he has led Preborn to save babies and bring women to faith in Christ. 77,000 commitments to Christ since he began this ministry some years ago. And so, Dan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Pastor Jeff, my joy to be here.
Well, I appreciate you, my brother. And so, Daniel, you started Preborn in 2007, is that right?
That's right.
And what was the impetus that got you going to say, I'm going to be all in and we're going to save babies?
Well, it was really born from time of prayer, Jeff. We would get up between 5 and 7 every morning to seek the Lord. And during one of those times, I really sensed his broken heart over that which you just read when you opened your program over Psalm 139, where he's knitting these babies together in their mother's womb. He sees every child. He's putting together the vascular system, their nervous system, all of that, intricately weaving them together. He has all their days planned for them, ruthlessly cut off in the name of self-determination and convenience in America, 99% of most abortions. And it breaks his heart. And I sensed that. And I said, Lord, what can I do that can stop the grief on your heart over having to see, because he does, every one of these abortions and the terror that's on these little babies that are being violently destroyed in their mother's womb. And that sent me out on a path to seek, like, what actually stops abortion? How can we do something about it? We do a lot of talking about it. We do a lot of legislating about it. We do a lot of blustering about it. But what stops it? It's a good question, right? And, a great example of that is the overturning of Roe versus Wade, which we're very thankful that Trump did that. Hopefully he'll do even more in this new term, believing he will. But the year after Roe versus Wade was overturned, more abortions. And both 2023 and 2024, there were more than when Roe was in place. Legislation didn't work in this case. But what does work is what the AFR listeners and the listeners to Jeff Shreve program do, and that is providing a free ultrasound scan, a medical scan, to a woman that's in an unplanned pregnancy that's considering abortion and having her confronted with the the beautiful reality that that's her baby. Inside her, the best baby picture, the first baby picture that she has, and she has an opportunity there to see that baby, and then with the practical help so that she can choose life once she's faced with the reality that, oh, I'm a mother right now.
You know, I'm just as you were talking, Dan, I was reminded of the movie Unplanned about Abby Johnson and how when she saw the ultrasound of an abortion, she could never participate in one or promote one after that. She saw that what it really was, and that is murder. Now, with preborn, you're showing the mother their baby before they're in any kind of abortion room or anything like that. But it really does make a difference when a mother can see their baby. That's a person. That's not a lump of cells or a clump of cells. And so what kind of responses have you gotten from women? Are they hesitant to have the ultrasound, or are they willing?
Well, we informed them that they, you know, so we reached them on the internet, Jeff, and we talked to them, and a nurse will convey to them that they may not actually need the abortion. They might be in the process of miscarrying. The only way they can know is to have a real-time ultrasound, medical ultrasound, try to get them in that same day. Most of them will come in the same day, like 90%. And so it's for their own benefit that we try to appeal to them to have the scan. And most of them are okay to do that. There's many that are not, of course. You know, they don't want to take the risk. They just want an abortion. They've been sold on it as an easy, you know, procedure, which it is not, particularly with the abortion pill, which now is 65% of all abortions. But yeah, it's in the most part they're receptive. It's like a $400 medical scan that we provide. Your listeners provide for free. Thousands of them over the years with AFR we've provided, and it's saved together, you know, over the last many years since 2007, over 330,000 babies, you know, a good sized city's been saved through AFR listeners. So this is a great thing that we're endeavoring to do together.
And Dan, how many of these do you have in different cities?
Yes, we work with about 228 medical clinics across the United States. Our focus is in the biggest cities of America, where most of the abortions are transferring, which is Los Angeles, New York, Houston, Dallas, whole state of Florida, Washington, D.C., Chicago. The DMV area. We have clinics all over those areas, but we work with centers throughout the United States as well on evangelism. We place ultrasound machines in these centers, so there may be a listener who's been particularly blessed that could underwrite, as many AFR listeners have done, an entire ultrasound machine for $15,000. It's all tax deductible. Machines last 10 years. It's a great investment. By going to preborn.com or AFR.net, you can be part of that solution. And that is provided throughout the United States to any city, frankly. The center needs a machine. Yep.
Yeah. Well, and so when a woman has that and she sees her baby, what kind of transformation do you often see in that woman that's in a crisis pregnancy and probably not 100% I'm going to have an abortion? They're more on the fence, but how does that push them over the edge?
Well, we've seen some miraculous things happen. I remember one where a woman came in, she was in her 40s, pregnant again, in a one night stand, it happens. And nonetheless, she went in, you know, she's wanting an abortion. She couldn't have the baby. She was a home a cleaning lady. Her teenage daughter was with her, college-age daughter, actually. And there on the scan was not one baby, but there were two. She had twins. And that just struck her so powerfully that she couldn't take the life of those two children. But she would lose her job being a house cleaner if she didn't have the abortion and had to be a mother. And then her college-age daughter stepped in and said, "Mom, I'll be there. I'll take your jobs for you. We can't let these babies, we have to let them live." And so it's just dramatic what happens when it's faced with the reality that these are, in fact, real children. Inside that ultrasound scan is not just a little fetus, but it's a, you know, it's a set of twins. It's a 7-year-old, you know, singing in the junior, you know, choir at church. It's a high schooler graduating. It's a woman getting proposed to. It's a mother having children. It's a grandmother holding their grandbabies on their laps. All of that. There's a generation. There's a family inside that little baby, potentially. Wow. And that's God's heart and desire, of course. And all of that comes to reality when they see that it's a person, not
yes.
a blob of tissue or a mass of cells.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I haven't really thought about that before, Dan, that, you know, that little one growing in the mother's womb is one day, Lord willing, going to be a grandfather, a grandmother. They're going to go through all those experiences of life. That is a really cool way to look at it. Well, let's talk a little bit about the abortion pill, because it seems that more and more women are going that route and thinking that it's, you know, oh, well, that's not like an abortion. I don't have to go to a clinic or anything. And obviously, it's promoted as a easy, clean way to do that. Walk our listeners through what kind of horrors are involved in that.
Well, aptly described it as horrors. It's, you know, the best thing that can happen is she'll take that deadly abortion chemical coat hanger of prostaglandin and progesterone, and through hours of bloody trauma, deliver her baby demise on her bathroom floor or toilet. That's the reality of it. And then she has to dispose of the body. No, and a clinical abortion inside an abortion clinic, which is a horrible thing as well, at least she doesn't have to dispose of the body. This is what 65% of all abortions are happening in a girl's bathroom, the same bathroom she's going to have to come back to several times a day, you know, for the rest of the time she's living in that house. Mm-hmm. And revisit the horror and the trauma. I mean, we're talking PTSD kind of stuff here that these women are experiencing. That's the best thing that can happen. What happens often, emergency room visits are up over 500% regarding these things, because maybe the entire product of conception, you know, the placenta doesn't evacuate, and she ends up 5 days later with a sepsis-like infection, and she has to go to the emergency room. This is a horror that the deep state, you know, leftist pro-death Democrats are saying is healthcare is quite the opposite of that. It's trauma and destruction and misery on these young women who take this pill, and they do not care. All they care about is singularly their ideology and their money. Mm-hmm. And in the face of that, you know, the compassion of Christ through the gospel to these women, there's somebody here that really cares for them, that will really give them practical help, that will talk to them about the truth of the baby, the truth about the abortion pill. And the reality of this thing, Jeff, is really stark in that while 65% of all abortions now are chemically driven by the abortion pill obtained on the Internet, they want it to be 90% because they don't have any overhead. They don't have a brick-and-mortar doctor,
right,
or insurance, you know, payments, utilities, any of that.
Right.
That's what we're dealing with here. That's why they're expanding it.
That's a good point. Well, Dan, tell our listeners how they can get involved again.
Yeah, sure. Appreciate every AFR listener that's helped underwrite an ultrasound. We'll send you a picture of a baby whose life was saved. For your $28, dial 877-616-2396. Go to AFR.net or preborn.com and make your tax-deductible gift, $28 for one, $140 underwrites 5 ultrasounds. And that's all tax deductible. So we're just so thankful for each and one of you who have over the years supported life in America.
Amen. And now, Dan, you have a new book out too, Hearing Jesus Say Well Done, The Secret to Securing Heaven's Rewards. We just have about a minute, but can you give us a little preview of that?
Yeah, we all want to hear that most coveted word, well done, good and faithful servant, but few of us know the biblical context, which would be good to know if we hope to hear it, right? And so the book tells us that. It also rolls out 12 magnificently escalating rewards that are waiting for the faithful in heaven. And every one of those rewards, Jeff, has one qualifying word. To him who blank, I'll get to eat of the tree of life. To him who blank, I'll confess his name before my Father. To him who blank, will walk with me in white. What's blank? Yep, nobody knows. Get the book. Hearing Jesus Say, Well Done, The Secret to Heaven's Reward. You can find it on Amazon.com. And it's a Bible-based about having your best life for a billion years in heaven. So that's
Amen.
What it's about.
Amen. Thank you, Dan. I'm going to pick up a copy of that. Looking forward to reading it. Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. When we come back from the break, we'll be talking to Phil Cook. Don't go away.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. And welcome to the program now, my friend, Dr. Phil Cook. Phil Cook is an author, TV producer, media consultant, critical thinker. That's what I love about Phil. He looks at life with a very discerning lens. And he is a former resident of Burbank, California. He got out about a year or so ago. And glad to be in Tennessee. So, Phil, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff. Actually, I got out 5 months ago, so just in the nick of time. It was pretty close.
Yeah, okay. Now, I know your business was in Burbank. Did you live in Burbank also?
You lived in Burbank, too. We still have a business there. I have a producer based in L.A. there, and we when the pandemic happened, we kind of scattered around the country. And so, you know, we work with churches and ministry organizations, helping them engage the media more effectively. And so we could do that from anywhere. And I decided maybe we want to move into the Nashville area, and a lot of ministries and churches doing amazing stuff here. So here I am.
Well, I know, Phil, you have you still have a love for California, beautiful state that's being ruined by terrible leadership. What do you see, and what's in your heart as you watch L.A. burn down?
Well, you're exactly right. It's absolutely heartbreaking. In many ways, California is the perfect state. The weather, mountains, ocean, it's just absolutely an amazing state. And you have to be pretty intentional to screw up a state that great, I have to say. And the mismanagement, the leadership failures have just been overwhelming. So and we're seeing it. Companies moving out, people moving out. I mean, every other person I meet in Tennessee is from L.A. And so and the people that can afford to move out are not the people you want to leave. They're the people that can afford, you know, if they can afford to move out, you need those people to stay. And it's just horrible management from any way you look at it.
Well, it's so expensive to live there, Phil. I always wonder how you get people to work at Taco Bell or McDonald's or whatever, because it's like, where do you live?
Well, then our wonderful governor, Gavin Newsom, raised the minimum wage, so companies aren't looking for those employees anymore. They're putting in robots. So all over L.A., you go to a fast food restaurant, and you order yourself from the kiosk, and the food comes out. And so it's killing the opportunity for young people to get into the workforce. You know, all of us in the old days had high school jobs, we had college jobs, we had summer jobs. Those are almost going away in California because they've just hiked up the minimum wage so high that companies aren't interested in hiring people anymore at those level jobs. So it was just a misfire completely.
Okay, so Phil, why do you think in California the people keep voting for the Gavin Newsoms of the world, these terrible Democrat leaders? Because it's a Democrat stronghold there in California. How long
it
before
really
the people
is.
Say enough?
It's a great question. And funny thing, when you look at the electoral map, most of California is red. And it's just L.A. and San Francisco that are hardcore blue, but there's just so many people in those areas that takes the whole state. And I do think that it's interesting that people have gone so progressively left. On social media last year, I talked about some of the incredible price hikes and the rising gas prices and the other things that the Biden administration had done and, these left-wing policies had indicated. And I had people respond, well, that's okay. I'm willing to pay that to live in a state that's LGBTQ-friendly, that allows abortion up until the last minute, This is a state where if you want to live the life you want to live with no hindrance whatsoever, no accommodation for anybody, that's the state for you. And I think there's just enough people there that over the years, now I think these fires are maybe changing things. I think the fires, people are starting, you know, I saw a guy post the other day from Palos Verdes that got hit hard right early on. And he said, my neighbor walked out of the burned out wreckage of his house yesterday and said, well, I think I'm conservative now. And I think we're hearing that a lot across L.A. People are starting to realize this is no way to run a state.
Well, you know, Gavin Newsom, who is, in my mind, the slimiest, worst governor, maybe in the history of governors, he's always got an answer. It's Teflon Don, deflect, deflect, deflect. Not my fault. Not time to talk about this. We need to support our firefighters. He hamstrings the firefighters with not having water, not having the proper equipment, not having enough people, enough trucks, all those things. And then he wants to say, oh, it's just an act of God. Who could have stopped it?
Irony, even before Trump took office, he launched a lawsuit against Trump just to block anything he was trying to do that would impact California. But now the tables have turned and he's having to go to Trump for help. So that kind of stuff comes back to bite you eventually.
Well, you know, Phil, as we look at it, as taxpayers around the country look at it, okay, if the federal government bails out California for their mismanagement, it's almost like rewarding bad behavior. I hate it that the people get caught in the crosshairs and they lose everything because they have an idiot governor, but that's not necessarily my fault or your fault that we should have to pony up and pay for it.
That's exactly right, and it's going to impact people all over the country. I've already read many reports of insurance companies. They're already thinking about hiking up the prices everywhere just to be able to cover what has now become the most expensive fire in history. So it's just insane that everybody's going to have to pay for such poor management in Los Angeles and in California. So I want to help people because there's really good people on the ground living there. I know really strong Christians who are trying to change the city and impact the state, and they lost everything. And so my heart breaks for those people. And at the same time, I just hate seeing people that had nothing to do with it get stuck with a bill simply because it was so poorly managed.
Well, I want to play a clip, Phil, and get you to interact with it. This is from Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, from Shark Tank. And this is what he said about California getting relief, tax relief.
Give me 30 seconds.
And Bass, I think every taxpayer in America, including those in California, would like to tie this aid to removing Newsom and Bass. Now, gone. Part of the deal would be, and I know Trump likes new ideas, here's one. Not a dime until those two are whacked from their jobs immediately. They are so incompetent, and all of the decisions they've made led to this, and they're still making mistakes. They're horrific managers. Whack them.
So he doesn't pull any punches, Phil. Would you agree?
He doesn't, and I totally agree. You know, here's the interesting thing. In business, if you fail, you get fired. If you lose money, you get fired, or the business shuts down, or you go out of business. In government, it continues to perpetuate. So it's funny, in academia, where they have tenure, where a professor can get tenure after a number of years and literally be a professor till he dies without being able to be fired. And in government, it's a very similar way. So I think it was Thomas Sowell who said, why in the world would you put, you know, spend money on people whose decisions have no impact on their future? You need to be able to evaluate people's performance, and we don't do it well in politics. We certainly haven't done well in California. So just like and one of the things I admire about coaches, you know, I look at all, we just came off the college football season, and you know, you don't perform, you get fired. Coaches get fired. They live and die by what happens in their performance on the field. And I just think we should come up with some system for making politicians do the same thing.
Yeah, the weird thing about college football, though, Phil, is it's almost in your best economic interest to get fired. Jimbo Fisher got fired from Texas A&M, and they had to pay him $70 million.
I know. I want that gig. I think, it's part of the negotiation at the front end, and it's, I think that's that could be said that the college presidents and the athletic directors who are hiring these guys, maybe they're the problem. I don't know. But you're right. The payouts in many of these negotiated deals are pretty remarkable.
It's crazy. Well, I know, Phil, you do a lot with, coaching pastors and business leaders and things like that. And what do you do if a crisis occurs and there's a moral failure or a gross mismanagement? If Gavin Newsom called you and said, Phil, help, what do I need to do? What would be your counsel to him?
I think there's certain lines I wouldn't cross, and that might be one of them. I might be saying, sorry, you've made your bed, now go sleep in it. I think, honestly, there are cases where you're too far gone. In my book, Church on Trial, How to Protect Your Congregation, Mission, and Reputation During a Crisis, I talk about the fact that there are some things that some churches where the corruption is so bad, the sin, the adultery, the sexual abuse, whatever the situation is so bad, they should probably just shut down and move on. Now, the irony is that the purpose of my book is to keep that from happening. I hate to see a church fail because of the stupid choice of one leader. And so in so many cases we've seen in the news recently, whether it's a sexual abuse thing, an embezzlement thing, or some other mistake that a leader makes, or a sin, or some kind of an issue like that, I see churches shut down, I see ministries close, and that just breaks my heart. Those people should not suffer because of that leader, whether it's a youth leader, a worship leader, pastor, whoever, who made that egregious sin. And so the book was written to help churches survive and thrive in the middle of a crisis. However, I do think there are situations like in California where Newsom has made so many egregious mistakes that stepping down would be the only thing to do. I don't think there's any way he can redeem himself right now. I mean, you'd have to be so progressively left-wing that you just don't listen to facts to keep him in the office.
One of the things I've noticed, Phil, with politicians is they rarely, if ever, say, I made a mistake. They never seem to own anything. It's always deflect, blame somebody else. I was right. This just, the fires. Well, we couldn't do anything about it. I saw Whoopi Goldberg, and she was saying it's a disaster, natural disaster. This is nobody's fault. It's like baloney. How can you be so blind? Either you're purposely lying, or you're blind as a bat. How do you view that? When the people come on and say, "Well, nobody could have prevented this," do you think they know that they're lying through their teeth?
Oh, yeah, I think so. We talk about the non-apology apology, where when you apologize for something, you're saying, well, if you were offended by my action, I apologize. That's no apology. You're not admitting that you made a mistake at all. And that's what politicians are masterful at. They're masterful at the non-apology apology. So they know they're lying. Absolutely, they know they're lying. I even wonder, and I listened to Biden's last little address last night to the nation, and he maybe because of his mental issues, he's probably thinks he's the greatest president ever. But he, because he's obviously tone deaf on what's really going on in the country, and I thought it particularly insightful that he's warning people about autocracy, which he's been doing for the last 4 years, and particularly during the hearings, during the hearings this week of Trump's cabinet, they're all always warning about, you have to promise not to weaponize the judicial system. You have to pay. What are you kidding me? They've been doing that for 4 years. So, God, the hypocrisy is just remarkable with our political leaders these days.
It really is. And so, that brings me into what I wanted to talk to you about also, Phil, and that is when these people are on the hot seat, Pete Hegseth and Pam Bondi, if you were to work with them and counsel them, where does righteous indignation come in when you're on the hot seat like that? One of President Reagan's famous quotes was, I am paying for this microphone. Well, he was visibly angry when he said that.
Yeah.
But people erupted in applause, and that really attached itself as a positive to him. When is the righteous indignation warranted, and when is it over the line?
Well, it's tough in that situation because you're dealing with senators, representatives who you're going to have to work with if you get this job. You're going to have to be, you know, have some kind of a relationship with. So as much as you probably want to rip them to shreds, and as much as most of these candidates, you know, Bondi especially, I thought she was remarkable. She's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And she could have eaten these guys for lunch, and but she kind of restrained herself. But she did push back, and she, you know, she created a line there that, Senator, do you really want to hear my answer or not? And she was being respectful but very direct and to the point. And I think that's the key. Always, always in every situation, I counseled a pastor recently who was talking, there's a police investigation going on with a staff member of his church from years ago. And he had an appointment to talk to the police about it. And he said, how should I handle it? What should I do? And I said, look, number one, be respectful. Answer their questions. To the best of your knowledge, answer their questions. Be respectful. That's important. But it doesn't mean you should just roll over and take it. So I think yesterday, particularly, and the day before with Pete, I think we saw people standing up. He, neither one of them was being a jerk by any means. They could have really humiliated some of these guys, but they were respectful, but they were direct. And I think most of those senators were just so off base that just speaking the truth and just standing your ground was enough to embarrass them. Adam Schiff is maybe the worst. I mean, that guy is built a career about lying. The whole Russian disinformation thing, it was just insane, and he just took that and ran with it, even though he knew it was a lie. And so how he gets elected back into California, that was a remarkable thing, but he did. And she pretty much did short work with him yesterday. So I think the key is standing up for the truth. You know, as Christians in a often hostile culture, we don't have to be jerks. We're not there to win the argument. We're just there to stand for the truth. How many times in the Bible does God say, look, get the army ready and just go stand. Take your position and I'll win the battle. So very often we don't have to go into the battle. We just have to take our position, stand for truth. And I think that can be the best testimony of all.
Very good. We're talking to Dr. Phil Cook, talking about what's going on in California. We're talking about the Senate confirmation hearings. And so you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. We'll be right back after the break. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you. We need to save them. That's why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on you and me. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies. And that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't either. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email PastorJeff@FromHisHeart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking to my friend Dr. Phil Cook, author, media consultant, TV producer, and critical thinker, former resident of California for many, many years as he lived in Burbank, still has a business there. And we've been talking about the LA fires, and we're talking now about the Senate confirmation hearings. And Phil, I want to ask you, I'm going to play a clip. This is from Mark Wayne Mullen, who's the junior senator from Oklahoma. And he's calling out his colleagues on the hypocrisy of their questions of Pete Hegseth specifically.
getting some advice from our second in command.
Yeah, but I'm just making a point because there's a lot about qualifications. And I think it's so hypocritical of senators, especially on the other side of the aisle, be talking about his qualifications, not being able to lead the secretary or be the Secretary of Defense, and yet your qualifications aren't any better. You guys aren't any more qualified to be the senator than I'm qualified to be the senator, except we're lucky enough to be here. But let me read you what the qualifications of the Secretary of Defense is, because I Googled it, and I Googled it and went through a lot of different sites, and really it's hard to see. But in general, the U.S. Secretary of Defense position is filled by a civilian. That's it. If you have served in the U.S. Army Forces and have been in the service for, you have to be retired for at least 7 years, and Congress can weigh that. And then there's questions that the senator from Massachusetts brought up about serving on a board inside the military industry, and yet your own secretary that you all voted for, Secretary Austin, we had to vote on a waiver because he stepped off the board of Raytheon. But I guess that's okay because that's a Democrat Secretary of Defense. But you so quickly forget about that. And then Senator Kaine, or I guess I better use the senator from Virginia, starts bringing up the fact that what if you showed up drunk to your job? How many senators have showed up drunk to vote at night? Have any of you guys asked them to step down and resign from their job? And don't tell me you haven't seen it, because I know you have. And then how many senators do you know have got a divorce before cheating on their wives? Did you ask them to step down? No. But it's for show. You guys make sure you make a big show and point out the hypocrisy because a man's made a mistake.
All right, Phil, what do you think about that and those comments?
Well, I have two thoughts. One is, he's brilliant. I mean, that was a brilliant analysis of their hypocrisy. That was just great. And I'm so impressed with his guts, really, to call them out like that, because it's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. On the other hand, on the flip side, I have to say, I feel kind of badly in a lot throughout this whole thing that we don't have more upstanding, heroic people that we can look at and idolize in many ways. You know, I don't mean that in a spiritual way, but just I just think that I wish we had more people willing to stand. I have a reason for this, but I wish we had more people willing to step up into political areas that lived exemplary lives, that were just God-fearing people, that had honor, a sense of honor. And now we seem to be going through this thing where, okay, well, he had fewer affairs than him, or he gets drunk less than him, so let's go ahead and go with him. So, you know, I have mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, I think that senator was brilliant calling all those guys out, because I think he's exactly right. On the other hand, I do wish we had more political candidates, political heroes that were just great men and women of honor and respect. And I think we've lost something in our culture in the last number of years. It's interesting. I went through the 60s like you did, and you know, everything became more casual. When I was a kid, I dressed in a coat and tie. My mom put me in a coat and tie every Sunday to go to church. It was a big deal. She said, "We're going to God's house. You need to look like it." And now pastors wear Hawaiian shirts and jeans with holes in them. And we just moved to a more casual society. And I think as a result, we've gotten casual about our morals. We've gotten casual about a sense of honor. We've gotten casual about our behavior. And I just kind of regret that. Doesn't mean we have to dress in coats and ties all the time anymore. However, I do sense that we live in a culture today that's gotten so casual about everything that we've almost lost the ability to point out, hey, there's a man, there's a woman who's lived a remarkable life, and I want to follow in their footsteps and be like that. I want kids to be able to emulate our leaders, and I just don't see many today that they can do that with.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, Phil, it seems to me that, you know, back a generation ago, you had people running for office, and both of them were honest and moral, you know, pretty much. They had different philosophies about things, and their ideas about economics or social issues might be different, but they both agreed on being honest, being responsible, being hardworking. I mean, those things weren't, you know, up for grabs. But in today's world, you had mentioned Adam Schiff. Fewer as slimy as that guy. Gavin Newsom is the slimiest, but Adam Schiff lies as easy as he breathes.
Yeah. It's like his second language. He doesn't even think about it, and it's really quite remarkable. He represented Burbank, where I lived for almost 35 years. So I followed him, and I just think reprehensible is really the only word I can think of. I mean, he just reprehensible. It's just I just have no respect for him at all. He lies even when it's obviously proven that it's a lie. He continues the story, and it's a shame. We live in a culture that we've lost so much of that sense of honor. And the fact is, from the beginning of the Republic, there were arguments, there were debates in politics. There have been fights that have broken out in the early days of the Republic in Congress. And so I'm not against vigorous debate. I'm not against, you know, countering somebody's arguments. But I wish those people lived a more exemplary, I'm having trouble saying that this morning, it's too early for me, exemplary life, you know, an honorable life. And I think we've missed so much of that in our culture today.
Well, the two candidates we had for president, both of them had a pretty stained past. Trump's got a lot of junk in his life. Kamala Harris really had no accomplishments other than being a DEI hire. I mean, if you just being blunt,
completely.
I mean, nobody could point to anything she did.
Correct. And you know, Biden has been a shill for the Democratic Party his whole career. You know, his integrity changes with the wind. Depending on how the party changes, he'll vote that way every single time. He has no ultimate moral background. And so all of them, you're right, all of them have had a lot of shady past. But, you know, at the end, we vote for who's going to help this country the most. And, you know, you deal with what you've got. Let's go back to the football coach analogy. He's only as good as the team he has to work with. And so in the same way, we as citizens are only good as the political leaders that step up. And so sometimes they're great, sometimes they're not so great. And so one of the things people tell me is, how could you possibly vote for Trump? Well, you know, when I look at the alternatives and try to decide, okay, what's the best policy for the future of this country, you've got to go with that. I don't care. You know, at some point, you've got to get past all those shortcomings, whatever they may be, with whatever candidate, and vote for who you think is going to help take the country in the right direction. I would give anything. I would love it if there were more godly Christian men and women. Jim Jordan is a good example. Great guy. I think there's so many that are good. But again, the ones that step up to the highest offices very often have that colored background. So we have to change the way we think about that and kind of understand that we need to deal with what we have and go with a candidate we feel that can move the country forward.
Well, that brings up a good point, Phil. So we just had the funeral services for Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter, who outspokenly said he was a believer in Jesus Christ. You know, he's kind of liberal, so who knows? But he was a terrible president, a terrible leader, although he didn't have a lot of scandal in his past. He seemed to be a good husband and father. What do you say about a guy like that?
I agree. I voted for Jimmy Carter back in the day and regretted it shortly afterwards. But you're right. He was a fantastic ex-president, possibly the best ex-president we've ever had in this country, as far as being out there trying to do good things. He got in the way of the government a few times. He poked into things he really had no business poking into. But as far as the nonprofit work that he did, the leadership work that he did, he did better. He was a better president after the presidency than he was certainly during the presidency. And I think it's interesting, you know, my wife and I were talking about the transition from Carter to Reagan and how the hostages were released immediately as soon as, you know, Reagan came to power. And I was thinking about the Gaza the hostage deal that's happening right now. And last night, of course, and during press conferences, Biden is taking credit for all of it, of course. But Netanyahu released a statement yesterday in Israel that thanking Donald Trump for his help making that happen. So, you know, it's just, it's kind of funny. Politics drives me nuts sometimes, but I don't know. I've lost track of what we were talking about, but I think you can be
a good moral guy that doesn't translate into being a good leader or a good president.
Let me tell you something. I work with churches and ministries for a living. I help them with media and getting their message out in a bigger way. And I can't tell you the number of pastors I've dealt with that were godly men, lovely men, wonderful men, who were terrible leaders, just terrible leaders, and some of them just terrible preachers and pastors. But they were wonderful. No scandal, no sin, wonderful people. So it's two different things. Just because you're a godly man or woman and you love the Lord doesn't mean you should be in charge of much. It's a whole different skill set being a really great leader. And I think study the Bible and see how many leaders that were close to God in the Old Testament failed miserably, and in the New Testament for that matter. So I think that we just need to understand, as Christians, just because they're Christian doesn't make them a great business leader or a great politician or a great coach or a great whatever. Mm-hmm. We have to look at those two different ways. In fact, I've had a couple of ministry situations where there was an employee, a high-level employee, wonderful person, loved God, loyal, but he was terrible at what he did, so much so that I just begged the ministry leader to, let's help this guy get another job somewhere else. And he wouldn't let me do it. He wouldn't let me do it. And finally I said, look, send him home. If you can't fire him or help move him on, let's send him home at full salary. And he finally agreed to that. We sent him home, let the guy continue making a full salary, and productivity at that ministry organization shot through the roof. Once that guy was out of the mix, the employees got energized, excited, the blockages were out, the bottlenecks were out, they did fantastic. And suddenly that ministry leader's eyes were open. So it's a great argument that, you know, you can be a great, strong, powerful Christian, but not be so good at what you're doing for a living, whether it's leading, being a politician, even being a pastor sometimes.
Yeah, and you know, Phil, I think it was in the book Good to Great, you know, Jim Collins makes the statement, you got to be able to make the tough calls if you're going to move the organization forward, even if that means getting rid of somebody that has been there a long time, or your brother-in-law that's the, you know, vice president or whatever. And that's hard for a lot of guys to do.
Let's get real controversial. You know, we have a joke in the church that we hire quickly and fire slowly. I'd like to flip that. You know, I say in this age we live in, we need to vet employees better. We need to spend more time before we hire somebody. Just because they volunteered a couple times doesn't mean they're a good employee. Let's take our time and hire people. But when we see people that are not performing well, I mean, the stakes are high. We're out here proclaiming the good news of the kingdom to the world. We can't afford to have people in there that may be nice people, but they're impeding that. And so let's, you know, we don't kick them to the curb. Let's help them find a place, get plugged in somewhere else where they could succeed and do well. But I just think that we need to hire slowly, make sure we have the right person. And then when we do find somebody that's not a good fit, let's move them on to a place where they could succeed somewhere else. I think that would completely change the effectiveness of the church and make a big, big impact in our culture today.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, Phil, how can our listeners connect with you?
Well, my blog is philcook.com. I'm Cook with an E, COOKE. So they could come to philcook.com. I have a podcast. I have a blog there. I write about these issues of church, media, faith, and culture. And so I'd love to see them there. It'd be fun. And thank you for having me on today. This was great.
Hey, it's always a pleasure, Phil. And when you go to the NRB in Dallas, are you driving or flying?
You know, I come to Nashville, and they move it to Dallas the first year for a long time. So, yeah, I'll probably fly. That's a long drive, even from Nashville.
Yeah, it is. I was going to say, if you drive, you got to stop by First Baptist Texarkana so we can visit.
Well, I'd love to do that. Now, that may change my mind right there.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Phil, thanks for being my guest. It's always a pleasure, my friend, and God bless you. I look forward to seeing you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, you've been listening to Real Truth for Today, and that was Phil Cook. Phil Cook has great books and great wisdom on how to do things, and he's been a friend for many, many years, and so I appreciate him. Appreciate him coming on today. Hey, as we like to end the broadcast, two words, shine and share. Shine is your life. Share is what comes out of your lips. And as we shine for Christ and share what great things the Lord has done for us, God will use us as His witnesses. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.